What's up, sports fans? Welcome to Sports Odds and Ends, the show for the fly-by-night sports fan. I'm King Cash, joined by my good friend, the one, the great, JVZ.
Doing all right over here.
That's good.
The NBA is back in full swing. Just basketball, hockey, everything is kind of back in full swing. So baseball's calmed down.
It's for now.
For now. I mean, they're still in a rough situation trying to figure out how they're going to fit all these games in. But NBA Twitter is back. Not really Twitter, but players are beefing again. We don't have to get into the details of that, but if you want, you got players and their sisters and girlfriends fighting with each other. It's kind of a mess, but it's the same beautiful mess that we expect from the NBA. As far as the actual games go, the Western Conference is shaping up to be pretty competitive as far as who's going to make it into the playoffs. Memphis, who I think had a 3.5-game lead on all the other teams, has lost a bunch of games. And meanwhile, I think the Phoenix Suns are at least 5-0. They were the worst of the teams that were invited back. Basically, everybody in the West except for the Kings has played well, and so it's basically guaranteed that we're going to have the little mini play-in tournament on the Western Conference side. So I think that's going to settle out after this week. On the Eastern Conference side, that is not the case. The one team that was invited outside of the top eight were the Washington Wizards, and they have lost every single game. They are playing so bad that they actually dropped below the Charlotte Hornets, who were not even invited to the bubble. So that's how things are shaping up in the East. They might as well have just not invited the Wizards at all.
I mean, it's a problem of you know, the stop and go of what happened. Certain people lose momentum, other people gain momentum coming back. It's one of these weird things that a lot of sports are going to go through. Teams, especially for the NBA, who was playing up until the pandemic happened, then got into a shutdown and then are now coming back after. We're going to see a lot of that as we go.
They've managed to handle this all pretty well, better than most other leagues. It's not perfect. And the Wizards are an example of a team that they had several key players opt out. Mm-hmm. So they were already in a bad position in the standings to begin with. And then they lose a couple more people coming into this bubble. And so now they're, you know, and I think for the Kings, it was, they were in a really good position. Then a bunch of people got COVID, and I don't want to blame it all on that, because they have a history of not being ready for big moments. It's been an incredibly disappointing experience as a Kings fan, where everybody got really hyped up going into this. Everybody had a chip on their shoulder. I think the Ringer left us off of a lot of their lists for who's going to do well in the bubble. And so we were really resentful of that. And now it turns out they were right to count us out. I'm not that sure, but people are going to lose their jobs over this.
But let's talk a little bit about some people that in the reform and coming back into this, some names that are coming up that weren't expected. We have TJ Warren, and is it Boy or Bol Bol?
Bol Bol. That's a he's Manute Bol's son. He's 7'2". He was drafted in the the most recent NBA draft. But he was a very highly touted prospect.
Yeah.
But his medical records were very suspect. And so he's like, if you can remember, his dad was 7'7" tall. And, you know, one of, if not the tallest player to ever play in the NBA. And he kind of had a, I don't want to say super limited, but like people that are like seven, people that are that tall generally have somewhat limited careers because the wear and tear on their joints is pretty rough. I mean, Bol Bol is 7'2". So he's, you know, a little bit shorter, but also tremendously more skilled. He is a lot like the big men that you see today that can shoot threes. They can dribble, they can pass, they can do all these other things that the traditional big men could not do. The big men that you used to tell to just stand near the basket and get rebounds. They can do so much more than that. And Bol Bol is definitely in that mold. But he is also, his medical records, I think it was either his, one of his knees or one of his ankles. It looked like it was rough. So he fell way far in the draft, deep into the second round where the Nuggets took him. And then they were able to kind of hold him out for most of the season and let him rehab. And now he's making his first appearance in the bubble, and he's turning a lot of heads because he's doing things out there that you don't expect big men to do. He's running fast breaks. He's throwing cross court bounce passes to people. And on top of doing the traditional big men things like blocking shots and getting rebounds. So it's good to see him go from a guy who's known for just falling in the draft and into somebody who looks like he's going to have a pretty promising career if he can stay healthy. TJ Warren was a guy who TJM is calling him the bubble goat. He was traded by the Phoenix Suns, who actually are doing pretty well for themselves right now. He was traded by the Phoenix Suns for cash during last year's draft, I think, or at least leading up to last year's draft. Traded to the Indiana Pacers for cash. And that's always sad when you basically get traded for money. not even a first or second round pick or anything for him. They just needed to get rid of him off the roster so they could free up his salary to sign some point guards because they didn't have any, apparently. He's been playing out of his mind. I think he dropped. He's averaging like 30 points or so a game in the bubble. He's putting up Jordan numbers, basically, during these last it's small sample size so far, but it's, obviously some players are taking the opportunity to make a big name for themselves, and TJ Warren is one of them. And so hopefully he can parlay this into, well, since he's playing for the Pacers, he's going to be in the East and they're going to make the playoffs because the Wizards are not. So this is a good time for him to get hot, and because that'll lead into the playoffs, and so we'll see how far he can carry this. But so far it's been about five games or so, and he's managed to keep this up. He's not a one game fluke anymore. But when you get to a seven game series, teams are going to be able to game plan for him. So we'll see how well he can handle with whoever ends up being his first round opponent. But overall, the Pacers were, I think people were thinking of the Pacers as one of those teams that was going to try to just make it out of the bubble without injuries. Not even like try to last as long as they can, but just survive this. But it looks like they're thriving a little bit.
That's good. Let's talk about this WNBA story that's been going on.
Yeah, so Kelly Loeffler, we've been covering that story for a while, and now because players have kind of run out of I guess legal or at least avenues within the rule book to use against her, they've now started going outside of that and getting, I mean, I don't want to say getting political because this was already political, but
yeah.
But yeah, they're now not just players on the Atlanta Dream, but players on their opponents as well are wearing Vote Warnock shirts. Warnock is her opponent, Reverend Raphael Warnock, in her Senate election. So for her Georgia Senate seat. And so, yeah, now if you can't get rid of her as an owner, now players are getting more creative and now they're deciding to campaign for her opponent.
Yeah. And so this as a quick recap of why they're doing this. So this kind of stems from people deciding to give owners and executives and other people deciding to give players and other people a outlet to voice their frustrations and all the other things with all the police brutality stuff, the Black Lives Matters things and stuff like that. So we now come to the situation where people are being allowed to they're taking the fight into other mediums, right? They can't necessarily remove this person from the WNBA. So let's get this person out of other positions of power where they're not willing to make change. I think one of the good, really good lines in this article, is talking about how you want people who can basically help change the pace of things and be helpful to the process of change, and they feel like she isn't. They feel like she isn't. So they're, you know, and she sits in a position of power of change. So they're going to attack that in a sense.
Yeah, and it's not that she's just being passive, she's actively working against them. So they've found another way to speak out about that. Obviously she's mad and released a statement saying so, but either way, there's nothing she can do. There's nothing there's nothing she can do to silence them, and even though there's nothing they can do to remove her from her position within the WNBA. So yeah.
So this is going to be a back and forth. It's going to happen for a while. So it goes on the wait and see shelf for sports odds and ends. All right, let's talk a little bit of hockey news. Hold on.
Yeah. If you are a fan of the Edmonton Oilers, Pittsburgh Penguins, Nashville Predators, New York Rangers, Minnesota Wild, Florida Panthers, Winnipeg Jets, or Toronto or Columbus, depending on today's results, your team has been eliminated and is also has a 12.5% chance of getting the number one overall pick, which will be decided on Monday. The qualification stage of the Stanley Cup playoffs is over. As well as the round robins games to decide the seeding for the top four in each conference. So, Vegas and Philadelphia are your Western and Eastern Conference number one seeds. Stanley Cup playoffs are going to begin this week. So, strap in because, this is going to be, this is the point where everything returns to normal as far as the hockey playoff structure goes. And normal when it comes to playoff hockey is really, 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 really exciting. So, strap in. We're going to have a lot of fun here. None of our three teams are in this. So
look,
we're just
still gonna watch. Playoff hockey is really good. Yeah. So I'm still gonna watch the games that I get a chance to watch.
And if you're ever following Twitter and you see somebody on your Twitter feed say bonus hockey, then figure out what game they're watching, because that game just went into overtime, and it is going to be like the most tense hockey that you will ever see in your life. From that point until whenever the game ends, it could be hours. All right. The MLS is back tournament is about to wrap up. The final is going to be on Tuesday at 8:30 p.m. Eastern on ESPN. If you want to tune into that, the Portland Timbers and Orlando City SC are going to be playing in that final. I think this has been a fairly, I mean, at least as far as health goes, it's been a pretty successful tournament for the MLS. Their bubble has been COVID-free. They've managed to get through the entire tournament. A couple of people have made names for themselves in the tournament. Both of these teams, I mean, the Timbers have been, I think a pretty decent team in the MLS, yeah. But I think Orlando City is a recent expansion team. So this is the first time they've been able to rise up, I should say. I learned that former Manchester United player Nani is on this team. And he's been making a name for himself this tournament as well, as their team captain. So I'm glad to see him do pretty well, because he was a very frustrated player when he was playing for United. Overall, I think, check out if you haven't checked out the rest of this tournament, check out the final, on Tuesday, and support soccer within the United States. The NWSL has had tremendous ratings boosts this year during their tournament. So it'll be good to see the MLS do the same.
I agree. So, all right, let's get to the last thing in the roundup. One of the big things in the roundup, something we've kind of been alluding to that was going to happen, and it's the players sitting out coming into this NFL season. We talked about a couple of weeks ago how NFL players and us as fans didn't really have any idea what the NFL protocol was coming into what this coronavirus season was going to be, this COVID-19 NFL season was going to be. A lot of players had spoken out against that and had already said that they were going to be opting out either way, they were going to be opting out. We finally got a statement from the NFL that detailed all of that. We covered that in a previous episode. So right now where we sit, there's going to be 69 players who have opted out of this coming NFL season.
Yeah. And if I got the details correct, I think that's like the period for opt-outs is over. So I don't think any more can opt out like through the official channels. Mm-hmm. That's the number that we've settled on. I think some of these are big names and some of them are not, but I think it's enough names to understand that this is going to have a pretty significant impact on the season, depending on how long the season goes.
I mean, we're coming into a relatively weird season anyway, right? We have the Buccaneers led by Tom Brady. We have Cam Newton on the New England Patriots. Like it's already, and like it was already setting itself up to be an odd season even before the COVID-19 stuff.
It's going to be a bizarro season, but I mean, I still believe like no matter what happens throughout the season, it counts, and it it'll count. It'll just count as the weird one. So this will be, I mean, hopefully everybody stays safe, obviously, but if everybody does, then we'll have some interesting stories to tell people generations from now about the 1 year where all this weird shit happened and they played without fans and then they tried to put virtual fans in the stands and all this other bullshit. But yeah, from one football league to another, the
one that won't stay dead.
and I'm glad it doesn't, because I think the XFL is in, I guess if I can express an opinion, I would say this is they're in good hands now.
Okay.
The they're up for kind of bankruptcy auction, and apparently they had like a lot of interested parties, but only one entity actually put in a bid, and that was the group owned by Dwayne the Rock Johnson, Danny Garcia, and Redbird Capital Partners, who put in a $15 million bid. So that was accepted. There were a couple challenges to that, saying that that the XFL did not get a big enough price for the sale, and because of that, they weren't going to be able to pay off some of their debts to people. Mm-hmm. I think legally the judge has allowed the sale to go through. So The Rock and his group will take over sometime within this month, and they're planning a 2021 launch in some sort of bubble.
Yeah, so we heard about this like earlier this week, and we sat on it and we kind of tried to see what was going to come out of it, what weirdness or blowback, and I think kind of initially there is just a lot of shock from a lot of people. I don't know if we thought it would be this quick of a turnaround for a sale of it.
Well, this was like a scheduled date for like an auction was supposed to happen, and so that this was scheduled, but I was expecting I certainly wasn't expecting there to only be like one group with a fully thought out bid. I think a lot of people were expecting like, ESPN, or not ESPN, but Disney was going to get in on this, or some sort of company with production credentials. Not that The Rock doesn't have his own connections with that, but like, we thought it was going to be like Disney or Fox or somebody that was already involved in broadcasting the XFL getting into it and using it as at a time when kind of these smaller leagues that can spin up and spin down quickly are kind of in demand, because we're starting to see like, oh, the NFL, they've got a lot of players to deal with. The NBA had to move heaven and earth and bring everybody over to Disney World just to get a bubble set up. Baseball is failing at organizing their bubble for their large league. We've got a small league here, and if the NFL fails at getting a football league, the XFL will be ready to spin up and spin down a bubble league, and they can play for 8 weeks and be done with it. In a way, small is kind of
a good
thing right now.
And this is something else we talked about kind of off the podcast, but we talked about the fact that they're also just going to be missing a lot of pieces, right? A lot of these names that were becoming names in this new XFL before, the one led by Andrew Luckstad and Vince McMahon, was they did find rosters with talent, but a lot of those really talented people are going to be in the NFL, right? So now you have to find these guys who are going to be able to be names on the field. I think right now, obviously, we're going to live in the clout of it being Dwayne The Rock Johnson, the head of the XFL. And that's going to bring, I mean, that's going to bring a lot of people to look at it as a product, right? And that's just going to be good. But there's also something in the back of my head, and I know, like, The Rock has had nothing to do with Vince McMahon in a long time, but there's just going to be people who correlate the two, you know?
Yeah, and I think people still do, because there's still kind of the idea that The Rock is taking over for now, and then as, you know, as the league grows, then there, you know, he could potentially invite more investment, which, you know, would not rule out somebody like Vince McMahon getting his buying back in. But yeah, it's not that they don't have anything to do with each other. It's kind of that they've been too busy to have anything to do with each other. You know, one of them is a movie star who can't find room in his schedule to come back to wrestling, you know, without violating his insurance agreements. And then the other is running that wrestling business. So, it's, I don't know. There's always the potential for that in the future, but I know some people are wondering whether they can get Oliver Luck back, because he's kind of reduced his lawsuit to try to just target Vince McMahon directly instead of targeting the league. So so I think he's tried to make it very clear that he doesn't have any beef with the XFL itself, just with the person that was in charge of it when this all. You know, the person who fired him a day before the league shuttered so that he wouldn't have to pay him. So maybe if all that gets settled, he can get his job back, and that would bring a lot of respectability back. But yeah, they have kind of a skeleton crew in the front office. But all the coaches, most of the players, all the coaches, all the players, like basically everybody below the front office was let go. And so there, it's going to be a process to bring all of those people back, even if they do want to come back. They have all the intellectual property, they have, you know, all the teams still, but, you know, all the deals that they struck before, with the different stadiums and, those are all gone now. The TV deals, that they had a pretty cushy TV deal set up with both Disney and Fox, where Disney and Fox would foot the production costs in exchange for the content, where now I don't think they're going to be able to strike anything that lucrative, or not lucrative, but anything that cheap or and low cost for them. I think the XFL will have to foot some of the production costs, but at the very least Fox is still somewhat interested in doing this, and I think having a big name like The Rock involved in the league helps get those people involved. He has connections as well with I think NBC, you know, whoever broadcasts the Titan games, he has connections with them. He has connections with HBO. So I think that overall they're in a pretty good position. And, you know, being a former football player, he is still passionate about football. Everybody's made the connection between this and the TV show Ballers. You know, financially, $15 million is for something that Vince McMahon spent $200 million getting set up. I think having to only pay $15 million for it is not a bad deal. And especially something that was pretty successful. And I think you and I said earlier that this is something where they could just do what they did before. If they can get as close to what they had before COVID, I mean, obviously without all the fans and stuff, but, you know, like all the same rules, all the same league structure and everything. If they just restart it, then I think it'll be about as successful as it, as you could expect it to be, short term. And then, because they did have a good thing going.
Yeah. I think they had a lot of momentum coming into it. So, yeah.
And that was what was so disappointing about them shutting down, is because they did have such a good thing going. So I think, so it's good to see that there's life in this product still.
Yeah. I don't know. It's such a wait and see, right? Because we have to see how they're going to set up deals. We have to see what the player rosters are going to look like and things like that. You know, with them definitely losing players to the NFL, like we're going to see if they're still going to have this friendship with the NFL. There's a lot of things that are on the wait and see for this because of a lot of the moving parts that are going on in here. So this is something we're definitely going to be keeping our eyes on. We want you guys to keep your eyes on it as well. But for now, we got some other things to talk about. So let's talk about the big college football scandal, as some people are trying to call it, which I don't understand why.
I mean, it's the same recurring scandal, or same recurring scandals. Everybody's kind of just figured out that they're all kind of the same scandal. and I think that's the that's like one of the big takeaways from this. We've talked about the racial issues. We talked about the payment, the lack of payment in college football. We've talked about the power structures and the, you know, how much money that the people in charge do make and don't flow to the players that are actually out there performing for everybody's entertainment. And all that is kind of part of the same umbrella, and it especially comes to a head now during COVID, where, I think of like any job out there where somebody has to go out there and work right now, in an unsafe environment in the middle of the pandemic. And, some people are out there getting hazard pay. But not everybody is that quote unquote lucky. Whereas these players, that are playing college football are not really being paid at all. I mean, they're being compensated with, scholarships and stuff, but if they choose to opt out, there's a lot of questions over what's going to happen. A lot of these players are hoping that this is an avenue for them to get to eventually make money in the NFL. But that's the agreed upon exchange that has kind of been in place for a long time, that will go ahead and make no money while playing as amateurs for now, on the hopes that somebody will come in and recognize that we have talent that is, and will pay us in when we get to the NFL. There's that, but then now that they're being asked to play in the middle of a pandemic, they're not getting hazard pay. It's not like the NFL, where if they opt out, then, you know, they get like a small little stipend. If they opt out, they get nothing. The players are being told that their scholarships will still be intact, but they're not being told much about whether their eligibility for that year that they opt out will still be in place. There's also kind of the question of what their standing will be within the football team itself. If they opt out, and with the way a lot of college football head coaches are, it might be the case where the coach says, like, oh no, you don't get playing time this year now that COVID's all over, when because back when COVID was happening, you chose to opt out.
Yeah.
And so therefore you are not putting the team, you are putting your own interests ahead of the team's interests, and all the other bullshit that that coaches try to put out in front of all these young impressionable athletes. So as part of all this, Pac-12 athletes have kind of formed a somewhat united movement. They've kind of united around this this hashtag, We Are United. As part of that, they've instituted a lot of demands, and they've connected they've connected the concept of racial equality to all this as well, because not only is this system already unfair, but this is a system that has traditionally exploited minority athletes, and so now not only are these minority athletes not being paid for this, they're being asked to work during a pandemic without extra pay, at a time where racial minorities are the ones that are being hardest hit by the pandemic. So it's all connected, and they've figured it out. And that's why that they're not just protesting about one thing, they're protesting about all of it. And they're and with the amount of money that is being made by college athletics, they are claiming that there should be plenty of money to both compensate them, to prop up all the other sports that are supposedly propped up by college football, and to, you know, to basically help fund the safety and extra hazard pay for everybody.
Mm-hmm.
And on top of that, you know, all the other social justice projects that they want to do. So it's,
I mean, because let's kind of in a sense paint a picture for people who may not understand this, right? So you have the pandemic going on, so sports can't be played. Now, even in part of that, right, you can't even go to school or classes, especially in most states that have a high number of cases, right? A lot of classes and class things have been moved online. So now, even in that, you have non-athlete college students now looking at their schools and universities and places of higher learning and realize a lot of the things that they paid for are things that are campus related. So those people are also looking at their universities and schools and things like that and going like, well, what are we then doing with that money? So you have that whole situation. So now these people are student athletes. They have that to deal with. They also have the fact of, like JVZ said, these people are using this as a springboard. Most people are using this as a springboard to go into a career where they can then make millions of dollars. But now you're not on that platform anymore, right? You're not in that showcase of being able to do this. So there is this pseudo want to play that the college athletic sphere, as we'll call it, have been trying to push on people, right? You should obviously want to play because this is your opportunity to do X. But you have players who are involving themselves in all of these things that are going on in this realm that is happening with the pandemic around universities and all this other stuff. People already know the billions of dollars that college sports brings in, primarily college football, college basketball. We'll throw college baseball in there. And they're looking at these things and they're realizing these play-ins and other things that college is throwing around, because I think the SEC is doing a play-in.
Everybody's completely restructured their schedule to the point where a lot of conferences are choosing to do conference only schedules. And they're also they're being a little shady about it. They're like, normally the rivalry games are like the last game of the conference season, and so what they're doing instead is they're trying to move those up early, because with the expectation that, you know, if the season gets canceled, at least they got their rivalry games out of the way, because those are the most anticipated ones. So it's like, I mean, it's like the school thing, like the elementary school and other school thing right now, because where it's like everybody knows that a whole bunch of people are going to get sick from this, but you kind of, I mean, you don't have to, but everybody's acting like you have to just try it. And then once it fails, then you could say you tried. And we're seeing that play out, you know, around the country with all these schools. You know, on the first day, everybody comes back, then the school has to shut down. So it almost feels like all these different conferences are taking that approach as well. And I think the players kind of see themselves as guinea pigs.
That's how they're being treated.
Yeah, it's they're going to get sent out there. A bunch of them are going to get COVID, and then this will get shut down in the middle of the season. Nothing good will really come out of this. And the players certainly are, you know, they got the worst end of the stick before, and they're going to get even worse now. And on top of that, they might end up with health problems that threaten their careers. And if they don't do this, then their scholarships might be threatened. Their spots within the team might be threatened. The different players have spoken out saying that they've already been threatened by their coaches. Washington State's Cassidy Woods has basically, like, he was removed from like all the team's group chats and stuff after his coach found out that he was involved in the Pac-12 movement. He was told by his coach that, you know, because he was involved in this labor movement, and because this movement was threatening boycotts, that was going to jeopardize his future with the team. So that's been kind of one of the more overt threats, but you know, there's always kind of the implied threat that's implied by the different role power that coaches have over their players, which is why it's important for leagues to come out with rules that that prevent that kind of retaliatory behavior. The college football season, this is around the time when it's normally supposed to start up. And so I think we're still waiting for a lot of details about how this is going to play out. But I think this is going to get pretty nasty.
It sucks, right? Because for the college athletes, unlike the NFL or the NBA or any of these other people, they don't have a lot of leverage, right? Because they live in a next man up system. And it doesn't give them the leverage that an NFL player, an NBA player can have to speak out and then get a lot of the media clout, or just get people on their side, peers, coworkers, whatever, right? Because while there's always going to be those people, there's just going to be people who are willing to partake in the next man up system, right? You vacate your spot to speak up for social inequality or any of these other kind of things, there will be a guy willing to take that spot. So they don't have the leverage of saying, oh, well, I won't play. What are you going to do? Right. They'll just get someone else. and then that hurts you. You kind of put your head down and go with the system. All the things that you listed hurt you, right? You possibly put yourself at more health risk. You you just don't get the eyes right now, because there might not be people at the game. There might not be scouts at the games. There's just so many lists of things, and it just sucks, because it's kind of like the deck is stacked against them in trying to do these things. Whereas you would feel like most of these universities would want to take care of these kids, especially the college football players, because that is one of their biggest commodities of income, other than tuition and all these other things that we started to talk about. But it's really rough. It's just really rough and really hard for them to have leverage to be able to get better things for themselves.
This is the only leverage they have, is to threaten to all stop playing, mm-hmm. and hope that the players that do participate in this have enough clout that that their teams are going to take notice, and not just feel like they're all replaceable. At this mm-hmm. point, I do think I feel like every team is going to try to just trot out whatever lineup they can, because a lot of what we've seen different leagues do is just to scramble to get a product that can get televised, so they can satisfy their TV deals. Because these are deals that were struck long ago.
Yeah.
And so they don't want to lose the money that, that they would lose if they don't fulfill that. So, because otherwise, like, the sensible thing for every league to do at this point is to just stop and just wait a year. But nobody wants to do that, because nobody wants to lose that money or miss out on that income that they would have had for this 1 year. Even if they only get a partial amount of that back, they want that. And that's how much money is involved. In this, and so, like, when you see that happen with the NFL, when you see that happen with baseball, it's disappointing, but at least the players are getting paid for that.
And we've had compensation transactions designed in these things, right? It's how those conversations are structured. Us talking about, especially from the fan side, talking about NFL players not knowing what their options were, was because those things should have been set long ago. And by the time you get those options and they're discussed and they're agreed upon, not only by the NFL and the ownership, it's also has representation of the players, to have an understanding and an agreement upon these things. And then by the time it gets to us as the fans, that's great. The problem with that NFL situation was there was all these discussions and none of the players knew about them initially. In all of that, there is talks of compensation and restructure for those people who do not want to participate and put their health at risk, right? That conversation had to be in there. You come to the college football conversation, and it is only a conversation of you're going to play or you're no longer on this team. That's it, because the players don't get involved in those conversations. It is a conversation between the universities and the people who give them money.
Yep.
Right. What can we get what can we still get out of these TV deals that we have left?
Yeah.
That much money, great. How many games do we need to play for that? 12? Great. We can throw that together, right? Because it's not using your people as a commodity, it's using your people as a product. So in the NFL, players are a commodity. In college football, they are a product. You are a product as a player. You are replaceable, you are there. And if you're not, cool, it doesn't matter. We have six other quarterbacks, you know what I mean? Like, of varying skill sets and six other running backs of varying skill sets that we can put on the field. So is just a it's one of these things where the unionization has to happen by the players. They all have to come to an agreement, and that's a big task.
Yeah, it's not easy, and that's why we're kind of seeing this like happen on a conference by conference basis first. We're seeing this Pac-12 unionization first, and then, but even then, it's not like a full like it's collective action, but it's not one where. Like in the NFL, you expect pretty much every NFL player to be a part of the players union. It's very rare when you see somebody that's not a part of that.
Yeah. And it's usually because they have some disagreement with the players union.
Yeah.
Most likely.
Yeah. But for the most part, they're all a part of that. And with mm-hmm. college, you know, well, with this right now, I think, it's very much an opt-in situation or people have to proactively decide to join this, which means they have to know about it first, and then they have to decide that they want to risk their standing within their teams to join this. They have to navigate their disagreements with their coaches when they join this. You know, so it's not that big right now, and I don't know if it's big enough to threaten anybody into any meaningful change. But it's at the very least, it's a first step that needs to happen.
In a social just whatever, just a universal thing, I want to get rid of this construct of manipulation of people being like. Not only are you letting yourself down, you're letting down everyone else. You know what I mean? Like, I hate that fucking shit. I hate when people do that shit. And, like, college sports, fucking all kinds of, like, management system and it's not just the team thing. Like, people use it in all kind of fathoms, but that's always what it breaks down to. You're letting down the team. Like, fuck you and fuck that. Get away from me.
Yeah, it's very much true in sports and other aspects. Sometimes other aspects try to use sports analogies for that. And I think to a lot of people's credit, I don't want to say most people, but I think we're getting more used to accepting that it is okay to make a decision for your own health. And we're seeing as players choose to opt out, I think we're seeing a lot more supportive messages saying, okay, that's good that you've made this decision for yourself. I'm happy you made this decision. Stay safe. We'll see you next year. And I think we're seeing that a lot more than, we're obviously seeing, you know, the stuff that you talked about, but I think at least the media voices, there's a lot more media members willing to stick up for the players when they say stuff like that. And since they dictate kind of the conversation that everybody that, you know, fans like you and I have, thankfully they're seeding that conversation with the, more pro player thoughts.
I definitely just want to see this. I think they just need a really good voice in representation for somebody within that player scheme to really kind of take it and run with it, right? And get people to rally behind them, because I think that's the thing that needs to happen, is a lot of these players need to unite on a single front of like what they want. And I think there's a lot of muddling when you do try to involve it in kind of all of the things that are going on. I think you kind of have to simplify it. And these are the things, you know, universally that we need as college athletes first. And then I think you kind of little by little start to tack things on, right? Because it's going to be hard to get everybody to agree with these constructs just because people are from different realms, different parts of the country, and have different leaning beliefs in one things or the other. So they're always going to feel like, you know, it's tacked on to something else. But if you can universally be like, hey, X is what we need as college athletes, that's just a fact. Let's focus on that first in a really unified thing. And then as you get that thing, we can let people fall off and say, okay, now Y is the next thing we want as people and as college athletes, and start to move on those fronts. I think right now there's a lot of muddling in trying to group people when people think there are things that they just don't align with.
Well, I do think it's important that they've kind of made the connection between all these issues. Even if it's like, you know, maybe, you know, maybe a black athlete looks at this and says, you know, this is just another example of black people getting exploited for free labor.
Yeah.
And, or rich people exploiting black people for a lot of money and not sharing any of the proceeds with them. Whereas a white player might come in and see that they are getting exploited too. It might not be kind of a traditional example that you can trace all the way back to slavery, but it's still, you know, they're still being exploited, even if they're a white athlete versus a black athlete. So I think there's plenty of common ground among all this. And if there's, you know, if there's benefits to all this, you know, if you make this safer for black athletes, you make this safer for white athletes as well. If you make this safer for, you know, it's so, like, ultimately there's benefits for everybody. And that's kind of been, you know, that's been a part of, you know, the entire racial justice movement, really. It's focused on the struggles of black people right now, but the benefits are ones that can be shared by everybody. And so hopefully everybody sees that. Hopefully that doesn't get lost in all of this. I think we'll see developments on this really soon, or some of these leagues will just put out their teams and see how quickly they get COVID and then just deal with the criticism that comes, because whenever they do choose to come back, we'll end up watching them anyways. And
yeah, it's kind of the weirdness that happens. I think that's all we got for you guys today. I know that was a big one with the college football stuff, but that was something that we just kind of have it needed to be talked about. We'll definitely be back following the basketball stuff, hockey. We'll see who comes out on top in soccer and let you know all about that on our next episode. But you can follow us on Twitter in the meantime. I'm at King Kaz. JVZ is at JVZ. DJM is...
It's call me DJM. Just
call me DJM. All right, I need you to stop getting your names ruined.
It's been the same for like a year.
I know. Other than that, follow the show on Twitter as well, Sports Odds and Ends. You can go on over to the website, sportsoddsandends.com, to see links to all of the links and stories that we talked about on this show and past shows as well.